Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Kiss 45 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. David Dollar Store Martino.
I'm back.
You're back, and you were at the dollar store again.
I was.
What did you get me? Did you get me the mullet, remember, from the...
Oh, no, I didn't even think of that. No, I didn't see any mullets, any mullet wigs.
Well, they'd probably be sticky and plastic and all.
Yeah, right. I got Vacation from 2015 on Blu-ray for $1.25.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean,
and some King Kong movies.
King Kong.
Yeah, like the Japanese King Kong movies where there's like a robot King Kong.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, those things have been kind of popular. I see them played a lot on a lot of these channels, you know,
yeah, when
I'm sitting around. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, it's been like that since I can remember. We used to have like Creature Double Feature on Channel 56 in Boston, and they used to play Godzilla and King Kong and Vincent Price movies.
Yeah, yeah, I've been seeing a lot of those lately on these.
Yeah,
I don't know what's the deal. Maybe it's kind of a retro for all of that. Geez, you know, I'm so old, I can't even think of all the new ones they're doing now.
Yeah, well, they're doing more Godzilla and King Kong and
Lego and all those.
Oh, yeah.
What's that other one? There's another one, too, where they... Transformers.
Oh, Transformers. Yeah, that's really big, too.
Yeah, it's been really big. And I remember thinking they were so corny. But no hate mail, please. I'm just old, okay? So don't shoot me.
Yeah, well, you were older when those came out.
Yeah. Well, they just seemed kind of corny, right? And they weren't as good. And then now, I watched one of the movies and it didn't hold me. So,
robot aliens that turn into cars.
What more can you ask for?
Yeah, right?
You know, hopefully they're not gas cars. They're electric cars.
They're electric cars. Be expensive to run them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you see, okay, so the writer strike is still going on.
Okay.
Yep. So nothing happening there. I see Drew Barrymore. Do you see all that scuffle over her? She was on apologizing on Instagram and everything for a while.
No, I didn't.
Well, I guess
she did this time.
She was just going to go back to work because she's got that talk show in the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On TV, so she was going to go back to work and do it anyway and without the writers. And, of course, that big uproar there. And so she was on Instagram crying and saying she's sorry and... It's kind of like that stuff. And it's like a lot of drama over. Not very.
I forget that you would need writers for a show like that.
Yeah.
I guess you do.
It's kind of the way it is. It's always been that way. Johnny Carson, all those people had writers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Comedy and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to have some. I guess. I don't know. We don't have any writers.
No. Why don't they just wing it like we do?
Because we're a terrible show. They're the big national shows.
Yeah.
We're just local, you know. L.A., nobody cares what happens in L.A. or Palm Springs. Seattle.
That's right.
And The Pope Exorcist, like I said, I'd give it 2 stars.
2 stars.
How's that? Wow. Take it or leave it. I really like Russell Crowe. I think he's a good actor, and the beginning part is really kind of good, but yeah, it's very, very tropey, cliche. It's just the same old thing.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Characters are just, like I said, mother-daughter fighting, teen daughter throwing her cigarette, fighting, move to a new old house, and the boy gets possessed, wow, and of course, Russell has to come save him. I wasn't excited.
Just the basic.
Yeah, I wasn't excited. It's one of those things you could have on, and you can do your work while you're...
You would hope with Russell Crowe that they would have, you know...
That's the only reason I watched it. The only reason was I turned it on, because the trailer looked pretty intense. And then I thought, well, it'll be good. He's a good actor. He does good shows, you know.
Yep.
But maybe he's turning into that Nick Cage. That's terrible. I'm going to get in trouble for that, you know. Someone.
Well, the Renfield movie, I actually enjoyed. With Nick
Cage. It looks like it's funny. I saw the first 5 minutes, but just didn't have time. But it looks like it'd be funny. So
yeah.
Anyway, well, now we've got a returning author with us today, and she's going to tell us how to be successful. So her newest book is called Betrayed by the Truth. And it's an Emmeline Kirby and Gregory Longdon mystery. So Daniela Burnett, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me back. I look forward to chatting. We always have such a fun time.
Jeez, I'm going to have to. There's so much. I have to get back into old radio when I have you on, because there's a lot of pronouncing to do here. There's so many names. Say this 10 times real quick. So what's going on with you? What's been going on since you were here last? Are you writing a lot of books every single year? Is this sort of a common thing for you?
Not a lot of books. I try to do one book a year because I also work full time. So it's a challenge in itself, finding the time to squeeze in to write. So I usually do one book a year. So since we last saw it, this book has come out and I'm working on book 10 at the moment.
How do you keep a series like this going? And I mean that in a lot of ways, not just ideas, but keeping it so that it's still relatively fresh, you know, so that people hold on to the interest?
Well, a key thing is there are all, as maybe some of your listeners don't know, just to refresh their memories, Emmeline Kirby is a journalist. She's the editorial director of investigative features at a paper called The Clarion. And her husband is Gregory Longdon. And he's a quote unquote former jewel thief. Who is now an insurance investigator, but he still steals jewels. So his past life, there's still a lot of secrets there, which I can weave into new stories. She knows some secrets now, but she doesn't know everything. So that his past always is hovering there in the background of their relationship, because he had left her once before. And that fear is always there in the back of her mind. So that plays well into a lot of themes of mysteries and thrillers, you know, secrets, betrayal, as in this book, the past, which has a ugly way of resurging. So I try to do it that way. And a lot of twists and turns in the story. I think readers appreciate that, to keep the readers on their feet as they're turning pages, to force them to continue turning pages.
Well, yeah, but you know, is it the character that you're relying on, or the characters, I should say, and their, let's say their growth or their, what they go through, probably the most important thing in the book?
Well, yes. I mean, the character is what drives the story. And it's important for the reader to make that connection with the character. Otherwise, why would they bother buying the book? So it's important to make that connection, as well for the characters to grow. Because in real life, everybody changes. Nobody stays the same. I mean, your essential nature stays the same, but we change based on the people we come in contact with, the situations we are put into, opportunities that we've missed or taken advantage of. So all.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All of that, those confluence of influences makes a difference in like real life, as and it should in a book, because a book is not true, it's not a real story, but it has to have the ring of truth so that readers will feel compelled to continue reading, that they want to find out what happens to the characters and what happens in the story.
So is it that you actually, you kind of come up with ideas of what you want them to go through? Is that sort of how it goes?
To a certain extent, I mean, when I wrote the first book, I had the idea for the next few in my head because it's a series. You know, you leave something in one book, you develop it a little bit more, and I knew how I wanted the characters to develop and how the dynamic of their relationship had to change because of their past or what will go on in the future. So it's a ongoing, I mean, each story can stand alone, but if a character, I mean, if the readers follow along, they see how it's developed. And that's why I wanted to leave something in each book to and build upon it more in the next one.
Well, do you find it's like a balancing act to keep Gregory likable to the readers, since he's a jewel thief and he has the secret past, or is that part of what makes him likable?
I hope he's likable to my readers. A lot of readers have told me that they like him. Yes, he's a jewel thief, and that's technically a bad guy, but he's not quite a bad guy because he's never, he doesn't believe in violence. He's very charming. He's very witty. So I think that aspect of his character balances out his criminal past, his ongoing heists. It's a contrast with Emmeline and Gregory to the villains in my story, because the villains have to be intelligent to pose a challenge for Emmeline and Gregory, and also to create the contrast for the reader, so they, you know, each character is distinctly different, and how the clash of the natures of the, you know, one is a bad guy, one is not a bad, how that interacts and intertwines to create the storyline.
So when you have the, let's say, the conflict or the tension between your main characters or something going on, do you get wrapped up in that? Is it emotional for you to write about some of the things they do?
Well, sure, because, I mean, as any author will tell you, I think, every character is a part of himself or herself. So as a human being, you feel things, so you have certain emotions and so on. So you put that into what the character is feeling or going through in that situation. So, yes, to a certain extent, that's true, because you have to feel that emotion to be able to transmit that on the page, and for the reader to in turn grasp that.
Well, I don't feel anything. I'm soulless. doesn't
are hurt. You that means you're a cold-hearted soul. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I'm cold-hearted snake. That's what Paul Abdul's saying.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, it's true. I'm telling you. I'd imagine when you're writing several books with characters and you put emotion into it and you put your feelings into it, and what you put them through, in a sense, creates another set of feelings. That's how you keep writing.
Right.
So when you look back at this, but how has this changed you over the last years? Because you live through your characters a lot in order to write them. So doesn't it change your real life as well somewhat?
Well, I guess so, because Emmeline and Gregor will never forgive me for some of the things I put them through. Especially in this book, there's a twist at the end. I'm certain they will never forgive me for what I've put them through, but adversity is necessary to create interest. In another sense, if Emmeline and Gregory didn't have the adversity, their life would be really dull. What would they do with their lives if they didn't have a little bit of adversity from time to time?
Yeah, you tell them to buck up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
And so when you do something like this too, you know, you've got the stolen Fabergé egg.
Yes.
That vanishes, you know, and things like that. Do you do a lot of research and things like the product itself of Fabergé eggs and what they're about, or do you just kind of create it and use the name?
Well, sure. I mean, an inspiration for me can come from anywhere, like a snippet of conversation, a place, because my books setting plays an important role, or, you know, an article. And as for this book, in terms of the Fabergé, I mean, of course, I knew about Fabergé eggs before, but I had read an article about a Russian oligarch whose yacht was seized because of sanctions, and they found a Fabergé egg on his yacht. And I thought, Uh-huh. That's very good. You know, they're covered, they're drenched in jewels and so on. Perfect for a jewel thief. And then just as a little history, if some of your readers don't know, you know, there were 50 Fabergé eggs, you know, commissioned by like Tsars Nicholas and Alexander between 1885 and 1917. And only 43 of those eggs are believed to exist today. So I thought, why not the Fabergé egg in my story to be one of those missing Fabergé eggs? You know, mystery and history play a lot of roles and they can intertwine and they put kernels of ideas in my head.
Well, that was my egg on that yacht.
So that means you're under sanctions now? Should we be interrogating you?
Yeah. No, I must have left it there when I was on the yacht.
Oh, I see.
You know, having
just a little
pills.
Bauble, right? You carry around in your pocket.
Yeah, and I was just showing it off to my friends there, all these oligarchs, and they have a lot of money. And I went for a quick lunch to Paris and
with
I
Ivan and Sergei, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. It was all a mistake.
I see.
Right.
Okay. We'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, speaking of research, what goes into planning these heists? Is there a lot of research that goes into it, or how does that work?
It really depends, because when it comes in terms of the setting of my books, I've actually been to these places, so I can describe them for my readers. I like to make them feel like they're walking in my footsteps or in the character's footsteps. So in terms of that, there's not too, I mean, when I'm there, I learn about the place because, I mean, I enjoy traveling, so I like learning about new places and the people there and the culture because I find that fascinating. And it just makes, you know, for me, it makes me richer in that sense. So I like to transmit that. In terms of the other stuff, when I come across something like this about Fabergé eggs, I look into more articles about the Fabergé eggs. Red diamonds also play a part in this book. So I looked up information about red diamonds, which are the rarest of the colored diamonds. So then I get the facts and then I try to weave them into the story I want to write.
Well, and you went to, I remember before you said like you like to travel to the places to get the feel for it and the setting was like a character and stuff. So did you go to Switzerland for this?
Yes. Well, and the thing with the traveling, I don't go to a place to do research. It's when I'm there, the place makes an impression on me. And then the ideas start buzzing around in the back of my head. But yes, in terms of this story, which is set in Interlaken in Switzerland, I visited the area several years ago, and it's absolutely beautiful, enchanting. The Eiger, the Jungfrau, and the Monk Mountain Range with their snow-capped peaks, Lake Thun, which is 700 feet deep, which plays an aspect in my story. All of these natural facts and history inspire me to with the story I have in mind.
And how is the Swiss cheese?
It's good. There are different kinds of cheeses, which I can also tell you, you know, Holland is famous for its cheeses. I just came back from Amsterdam, so they have a lot of cheeses there. Not only Switzerland is known for its cheeses.
Did you yo-ho-ho and out in the valley over the mountains?
No, but when we were there, we did go somewhere and they had someone do some yodeling for us.
But the
landscape is absolutely beautiful. We happen to have been there in the late summer, August, September, but I can only imagine what it's like in the winter time too, when everything is with a blanket of snow.
Yeah. And so you can really, do you have a problem describing your area, or I shouldn't say problem, it's like, well, how do you capture that in the right words? Is that something that must be kind of a natural skill?
I think so. Not to sound arrogant or anything, but I think so. Before I started with my mystery series, I wrote two poetry collections, and they're completely descriptive. So I already had that skill set in mind. So, I mean, granted, prose is different, but when it comes to the description, I've already know how to do that.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of way of, everybody has a different way, but I just, is there particular parts of a setting that you focus on yourself that you find is the best way to describe an area or that people can pick it up?
Well, it really depends, because I always love the sea as well as the mountains. So, I mean, whenever I see such a setting, it's like automatically I'm like, oh, how beautiful. And then I start, you know, in my mind, what I see in front of me, I hope to be able to transmit to my readers. So I think also my descriptive skills. When I was little, I wanted to learn how to paint and paint in oils. I can't even draw. So I guess I draw with my words rather than painting. But I love, you know, art as well. So maybe all of these factors play into my writing.
Yeah, it's a real interesting area of writing because some people do it really well and sometimes it just sounds
forced.
Yeah, that's a good word.
I think it has to be that you really have to feel the setting and also to a certain extent to love the setting to be able, if you love something, then you're better able to describe it. So I think that's like the biggest factor in that.
You were talking about poetry, and it just reminded me, I was just over the weekend, I was taking a fiction course with a best-selling writer, and he said that one thing that he does is he reads poetry out loud for like 10 to 15 minutes before the day's writing session. I was wondering, do you have any rituals that you do before you begin writing, or do you just sit down and start?
I just really just sit down and start. It's like whatever stage I'm in the story, I just pick it up from there. I don't really have any rituals. Because as I said, you know, I work full time too. So that makes it difficult for me to write. So during the day when I'm taking my walk at lunchtime, if an idea for the story pops in my head, I quickly write it down so I don't lose it. Or at night, in the middle of the night, sometimes I think of a great line of dialogue. I wake up right away and I write that down so I don't forget it by morning. So other than that, it's just, you know, I always, before I start writing each book, I have the idea for the story planned out in my head. I don't do an outline, but just the basic idea. I know who the killer is. I know what I want to happen. And so at least I have something to follow as I go along. Of course, a great idea might come along the way and I introduce that in there, but I have the basic plot in my head before I even sit down to start writing the book. So that's why each day I can just pick up at the point where I left off previously.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I always just drink coffee and smoke crack and, you know.
I drink tea. I don't like coffee. I drink tea.
Yeah, I don't like coffee either. It's just the thing to do, right? You know, I follow the trends and I have to. And so now when you're writing about a bad character in the book, how do you approach that? Like, how do you get into the mindset of the bad person, and how much do you describe them, or do you kind of get more behind the whole character, or do they just come in and create the turmoil?
Well, they do create the turmoil. I mean, in terms of in this book, let's take an example. There's Alexander Colfax, who's a hotel magnate. He's one of the people who is killed. But, you know, he's supposed to be a philanthropist, an art connoisseur. But then we realize when Emmeline and Gregory start peeling back the layers of his life, he has no scruples. And he doesn't shy away from murder and blackmail or treason as long as if his empire would prosper. And he has his coterie involves a Russian mafia boss, the son of a Kremlin elite. and a spy in a Russian spy in MI6. So, you know, I've always loved spy thrillers and spy stories and mysteries in general, plus articles about such things, you know, Russian betrayal and Russian spies and defectors. They all are, those kind of articles always attract me. So I'm able to weave that in into the villain that I'm creating. So as I said before, you know, inspiration comes from everywhere.
And how much of yourself are you putting into each of these characters? And is there one that is more you than the other?
Oh, well, that would be a secret. You know, you see, you know, I have
oh,
to
come
keep,
on.
I have to keep some secrets to myself.
No,
I can tell you. Okay. One thing I will tell you, I'm not part of any of the bad guys. Okay.
So,
I'm not a perfect person. I have a short temper and I'm impatient, but I have never killed anybody. I've never committed a crime. But other than that, some things have to remain secrets.
Right. Like the Fabergé eggs that are sitting behind your counter right now.
Why did you have to tell everybody?
Well, there has to be some secrets we give away.
Oh.
I mean, come on. That's what the listeners are
that
here
for. That spoils the fun.
Well, depends on the kind of fun you like. You know? Oh, so it's really kind of a process. Do you ever get into a story? Like you have this kind of idea of what you want to do and you're doing piece to piece. Have you ever come up to it where you're 4 months in and you just don't like where it's going?
Not really, because as I said, I've planned the thing out. I may get a new idea that, you know, shifts the storyline a little bit, but essentially I have to like the story to be able to want to bring it to fruition. But not really. I mean, I may come back one day and say, oh, that paragraph, like when I, at the end, once I go through the whole book, it's like, oh, that's not so good. Let me move it somewhere else. But not to like a whole chapter or three chapters. I've never, until this point, and I hope I don't, knock on wood, come to that problem.
Right. Well, and there must be a character in the story that you've taken after of a person that's in your life. And you want to tell us who that is?
Well, again, this comes to secret. And I will tell you something in general. It's the old adage of never get an author mad because you will be the murder victim in her next book. So I will leave it at that.
Well, there you go. You know, I just thought we could get someone on the other line and find out the story. But that's okay. Do you know how far you're going to go with these characters, like at this point where you're at now? Or do you just don't know book to book what you're going to do next with the characters?
Well, I don't know how long the series will go, but in a sense, it is book to book because I've left a major twist at the end of this book on the last page that sets the stage for the book I'm working on now. So I always like to do that, leave a little cliffhanger, leave a little secret or something hanging so that we can transition to the next book. But in terms of how many books are going to be in the series, I don't know, because I have ideas floating around in my head for Emmeline and Gregory. So when those ideas peter out, then I'll start something new.
Yeah, you just don't know. It's interesting. So what's your relationship with your characters?
Oh, I like them. I like my character. I especially have a soft spot for Superintendent Oliver Burnell of Scotland Yard, who's Gregory's nemesis. You know, he knows Gregory is guilty, but he's never caught him red-handed, and he continues to do that. And I like having verbal tussles. I have a lot of fun writing the verbal tussles between Burnell and Gregory. They just flow off the page. And sometimes the conversations too between Emmeline and Gregory, because she knows she hopes he's not stealing anymore, but you know, their verbal tussles are fun to do, as well as now that they're married, their dynamic has changed, and you see them more as a team. Not that they weren't a team, a sleuthing team before, but they are more of a team because they are married now. So it's just a lot of fun to do that.
Well, how do you create your dialogue? Do you hear your characters, or is it something where you read out loud? There's so many ways to come up with ways of doing dialogue. Some people even use dialogue from actors from movies. How does it work for you?
I hear the dialogue, like the setting, the scene, and then I can hear what Emmeline's going to say, or Gregory, or Burnell. I hear it in my head. No, I don't play any dialogue. I mean, and I'm American, as you can see, but my characters are British. So since I've been an Anglophile since I was a little kid, so I've always read books set in England and the UK. I've watched TV programs and movies. So my ear is accustomed to the dialogue. So I can, and expressions and so on, so I'm able to put that in my stories.
So you dress up like your characters, and
no, I don't dress up. I don't dress up. No, there's no play acting like here. It's all just evolving in my head.
Well, it's a method, right? You could just like, you know,
yes, it's
like
true. No, it's true. I'm not knocking that, but I don't happen to do.
Oh, jeez, you know, I'm in my dress all the time, and you know, playing all these characters and stuff. I don't tell you, you know. So, do your characters actually get to choose what they're going to do in your situation, or are you completely in control?
I have total control. They may think they have control, but no. I have total control.
Put her foot down there.
Yes.
Know? So where to next? Like when you've done a book, you said it's taken a year, so this is coming out, this is all being done. Or have you already set your mind to the next book? Or
yes.
You do. You've already got that kind of going, or it's in your
yes,
mind?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yeah, it was because, as I said, you know, it is a series, and I knew I was going to leave something hanging at the end. So I have to move that moves me into the next book. So I had to have that idea already percolating in my head while I was writing this book.
Right. But it doesn't. So it doesn't interfere. No, it doesn't at all. Eh?
No, it's just, because for me, it's just a natural progression.
No, I guess. Yeah, it would be. So what's the most important thing in a book, in a story to you?
Everything. I mean, everything is important, but character is the most important, because that's what drives the story. That the story evolves from the character and the situations the character will find them in, the conflicts which create tension, leave a space for twists. Character is what drives the story, and then and setting is like another character for me, which just enhances the story being told.
And you know, yeah, character being really important, and they can make a story last a lifetime. You know, hundreds of years. They can, you know, look at Sherlock Holmes. People still. Sure. You know, they dress up like him. They've rewritten him, and it's a character that people act like he's alive. You know,
right? Because they've readers have made that connection. You know, yes, it's a character from a different era, but they've made the connection, and they admire certain parts of his character. They don't others, but I mean, that's natural, because we all have. Good qualities, and we have flaws. So you don't dislike someone for certain things and not like them for something else. It's just that mélange of different things makes the person in real life and a character, and that's what readers choose to follow. I mean, if you don't like the character, you're not interested in the character, why bother reading Sherlock Holmes's adventures or Emmeline and Gregory's adventures? It's like they don't make an impression on me. So
right. Well, I don't have any flaws. But who's your Sherlock Holmes character? Who would be your character that you think is the makes the most impact? And I know it's a tough situation to ask someone to choose, but is there one character that you think resonates with readers the most?
In my books?
Yeah.
I think it has to be Emmeline and Gregory, the two of them. They're inextricably intertwined, even though they are so different. But their differences make their sleuthing so palpable and exciting, because they're coming from two different directions. So I don't think the stories would be as exciting if one was not there and one was, even if you liked the one that's there. So I would have to say Emmeline and Gregory.
So the two of them themselves, each of their character, together, they create almost a new character.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the point. They bring different strong suits to the situation, and that does create another character.
That in itself also makes it, I guess that also gives you a direction of how you're going to write them.
Yes, 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 of course. Yeah, because like before they were married, they were more separate, even though they were like moving to and they're solving the crime together. Now that they're married, that creates a completely different situation. So, yes, that's extremely important.
Wow. So what country do you want to go to next?
Should I tell you? Well, the new book, it will be in London. It has to be in London because they live in London, and it'll be set in Amsterdam too.
Wow. There you go. So have you been to Amsterdam, or are you going to go?
Yes, I actually just came back.
Wow, traveling. You just exotic lifestyle or what?
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far, but I do love traveling. I think it's so enriching, and I just love getting away, love seeing new places, you know, meeting the people, experiencing, you know, immersing myself in the culture.
Wow. Did you find the writing communities in a lot of these countries are quite similar to what you experience in the U.S.?
I really, like, when I've been to these places, I really haven't seen that. There was, when I was in Edinburgh in Scotland, the guide on our group we had, he did tell me that a certain pub is where Ian Rankin was usually hanging out, but I didn't have an opportunity to go to that pub. But I would assume that writing groups are similar in different countries. I mean, essentially, writers everywhere, there's inherently something the same. So there's a magnet, they attract to one another.
And being an American, and you write a lot of, you know, these mysteries or European-based, let's just say, do you find a difference in the style of writing something, let's say a European mystery, as compared to an American mystery?
Yeah, there are different styles. Like if you read, I've only read a few, but like those Scandinavian, those Nordic ones, they're very different. Even like British, mine tend to be more, because I'm Agatha Christie is my hero, so I have that in mind, and you know, the great British writers in mind when I'm doing my series. But I would have to say that they are different. Like a lot of the difference between British writers and American writers tend to rely a lot on technology and, you know, computers and so on. First of all, I'm not good with that. Plus, I don't like to have the story, you know, solved by that. I like my characters to use their intellect to solve the crimes. I mean, in this day and age, you know, you have to have the internet there and cell phones and things, because my stories are contemporary. They're set in 2010. But with that said, I like to have Emmeline and Gregory solve the stories rather than to have technology solve the stories. And I think a lot of American writers tend to rely on that more. And that doesn't have an appeal for me. There may be for others, but that doesn't have an appeal for me.
Agatha Christie, is he an American writer?
Oh. No, the grand dame of mystery.
So what's your thoughts then on the publishers in the new versions, republishings of Agatha's books being, let's say, edited or changed to fit the times. Do you like that?
I disagree with that. Disagree with that completely, because she wrote in a certain period. She's describing the period of the time. So if you dislike what the story is, then you can use that as a history lesson to say what was wrong during that period of time. But to go in there and completely change the story to fit, you know, 2023, I disagree with that completely. It's like, you know, when they go in and they colorize black and white movies. I'd hate that.
Yeah.
I grew up watching black. I hate that when they go in there and colorize it just so it can appeal to somebody, you know, one of the Gen Z today or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. It's for Dave, you know, it's not for.
No, I don't like that either.
Yeah.
I don't like that either. I like black and white. Yeah. What about, speaking of movies, what about the recent Agatha Christie movies, the adaptions and stuff? Have you seen them, and what do you think of what they're doing with her work?
The first, the Murder on the Orient Express with Kenneth Branagh, I thought that was pretty good. The second one, Death on the Nile, I think it was a huge tragedy. They were introducing themes from today and introducing characters that were not in the story. I think it was a huge tragedy. And there's this new one coming up, A Haunting in Venice. I'm not even going to try that one. It looks like they made it more like a horror story rather than a mystery. So, I don't like science fiction and horror, so I'm not even going to that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dave's got a book you like to read.
Horror, yeah. Well, I write some horror and some science fiction.
Oh, do you?
But it's okay.
A lot of people like it. It doesn't appeal for me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it would keep me up at night if I read something like that.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you've achieved your goal.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I thought that Gregory Longdon's going to turn into a werewolf.
No.
Oh, no. Come on, just think about that. That would be fun.
No, he's suave and dapper. No.
Yeah,
no,
well, werewolves can be that way.
Yeah.
Vampire, you know, you could run around the country and anyway. Well, I was going to say you could use my idea. No charge, really.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
Yeah,
I've heard that before. Whether I use it or not, that's a different story.
I've heard that before. Don't call us, we'll call you, and nobody calls.
Yeah, I've heard that one too before. I'll send you an email, and you never hear from anybody.
Oh, I know. It happens to me all the time. It's terrible. Yeah. I guess it's my hair. I don't have any. Anyway, so let's talk about where people are going to find Danielle. Like, do you have social media set up? Do you have a website, shows to go to, dances? Are you on, you know, that dance thing on TV coming up or something? Or anything?
Well, I have my website, DanielleBurnett.com. I'm on Facebook and Goodreads and BookBub. And if anybody, any of your listeners will be here in New York on October 12th, I will be doing a reading and book signing at the Mysterious Bookshop in Manhattan. So I would love to see anybody. And my website has an email address. Somebody can drop me a little note. I always like to hear from people. So I'm looking forward to it.
And BookBub, so do you work that at all? I've never really worked that website.
I list the books that I've read there, and I've made connections with other authors. So, you know, it's a networking type of tool.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I know they do sales, and I know some writers that do things and get really into it and all that with BookBub, but I never have. So I just wondered if.
Yeah, no, I haven't done that. I just mostly, you know, to make connections with other authors, and maybe you get see a new book that I might be interested in reading. So.
Yeah. 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 Dave's got a really good one. You might be interested. You should.
The horror one.
Yeah. The horror one. It's great. You know, if you can't sleep, this will really help you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Well, we appreciate you being here. This is interesting. And, of course, we'll have all of your links up on our website so people can find you. And, of course, the new book's called Betrayed by the Truth.
Yes.
That's an Emmeline Kirby and Gregory Longdon mystery. So our guest has been the author of that book, Danielle Burnett. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I've had a wonderful time. We always have a great conversation.
Thanks, Daniela.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.